This is Glorious Food at KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington, your show about all things food on the beautiful, green, verdant Olympic Peninsula. I'm your host, Mara Lathrop. Today, we've got the farm report, of course. We'll be helping out with the cut and wrap of some locally raised pork. And let's start today by talking about preserving summer fruit for holiday gift giving. We moved last June, so I didn't get much done in the way of food preservation all summer, although I did do a couple of projects. I made a crock of dill pickles in the beautiful old crock that came down from my great-great-uncle Warren. The pickles were crunchy and dilly and delicious. We ate them, we shared them with guests, and we gave them away. They're all gone, of course. My other projects, though, were planned for right now, for this moment, the holiday season. A friend and I made a big batch of raspberry vinegar out of a heaping flat of just-picked red and ripe raspberries. This one your name, fruit juice. In a glass, you know me can't lose. Take away my worry, my stress, and my blues. Fruit juice. Yeah, that was natural vibes. I want to give them. My princess says she loves it when we write on the rhythm. Natural berries are so very good for the system. Some tart, some sweet. Me just can't resist them. Fruit juice. It sat in the cool, dark back part of my basement for about 6 weeks while the raspberries and the sugar and the white wine vinegar all spoke with one another, after which we strained out all the solids, processed it in half-pint jars, and then the wait began. This was the second time my friend Tia had made raspberry vinegar, following the advice of Hugh Fernley Whittingstall of River Cottage fame. According to Tia, the raspberry vinegar was pretty dang good the minute it was strained and bottled. But the jar she put in the cupboard improved with age, and by the time last December rolled around, she had some amazing raspberry vinegar for her holiday larder and to give as gifts to friends. As it turned out, I was one of the lucky recipients. And like I said, that raspberry vinegar was amazing. So, last summer, of course, I asked to be in on Tia's raspberry vinegar action, and we decided to age the entire batch. And guess what? We divvied up our jars the other day, and I'm going to taste mine right now, right here on the radio. Here we go. It's syrupy, thick enough to coat a spoon. Wow, that was really good. The first thing that I taste is summer. Raspberries sweet on the tip of my tongue, and then the sharp sour of the Italian white wine vinegar we used rolls back and sparks up my entire mouth, and then finally recedes, and I get a final burst of raspberry for the grand finale. Okay, my share of the raspberry vinegar came to 8 half-pint jars. My plan is to keep 3, using them whenever I want and with complete abandon until they're all gone. I've got plans. Dressing for a spinach, bacon, hard-boiled egg, and slivered almond salad. As the sour instead of lemon juice the next time I make my grandma's oxtail and cabbage borscht over vanilla ice cream. And can now we all say together, raspberry shrub. Mm. The other 5 jars I'll give as gifts, because isn't that just the best? To make something way back in summer, trusting your ingredients and your effort to the cool and the dark for almost half a year, laying down the hope all the way back in the planning stages that it'll turn out well. And then when it does, you get to share it with people you love. My third preserving project got underway right after the strawberry vinegar. We made drunken fruit, something that I've been putting up off and on for over 30 years. Drunken fruit is made with fresh, ripe, but not too ripe, stone fruit and berries, and decent quality alcohol. It doesn't have to be great, but it does have to be decent. And sugar, of course. You can't have drunken fruit without the sugar. Drunken fruit is about capturing something of summer in a jar, something so full of promise that it will keep you going through the darkest days of winter. We layered a half-gallon jar and three-quart jars with blueberries and cherries and raspberries. We added quite a bit of organic cane sugar and filled the jars to the brim with either Mount Gay rum or Kettle One vodka. Ooh, all that expensive booze, I hear you remark. Mount Gay rum? Top shelf vodka? By the quart? By the half-gallon? What did you do, win the lotto? That sounds like some pretty fancy drunken fruit. And it's true. It's very fancy this year. After my mom passed away a few years ago, I inherited, along with some furniture and family stuff, the contents of her pantry. The unopened jars and cans and packages all went to my mom's local food bank. But like I told my brother when we were cleaning out the kitchen, I don't think the food bank is going to take the liquor. My mom believed in a well-stocked liquor cabinet, that it was one of the hallmarks of good hospitality. Her motto when she was entertaining was always, with open hands, never skimpy. And so that is how I ended up with two cases of assorted top-shelf hard stuff. My mom always loved my drunken fruit, was always first in line when I opened the drunken Rainier cherries every year after Christmas dinner. I hadn't made drunken fruit for a while. Last summer, she'd been gone for 2 years. And since life goes on, it was time to make another batch of drunken fruit for the holidays. What better use of my inheritance? It was a great deal for me. Tia provided all of the fruit, and my deceased mother provided all of the liquor. I threw in a couple of jars. Anyway, the same day that Tia came over to collect her share of the raspberry vinegar from the basement, we divided the drunken fruit as evenly as was humanly possible. Same as with the raspberry vinegar. We'll use some and give some away. But one of the quarts, Tia and I didn't divide at all. We put it in the back of a cool, dark cupboard to age and mellow all the way into next summer because it seems that Tia's sweetie Cody popped the question recently and Tia accepted. We'll use that drunken fruit in the wedding punch that Tia promised I can make for the toast to the newlyweds at the reception. So congratulations, Tia Hopkins and Cody Taylor, my farmer friends at Crooked Shepherd Farm, and happy holidays to you and all of yours. I wish you the warmth and pleasure of meals shared with friends, peace on earth, and dreams so full of promise that they will keep you going even on the darkest days.
Let those December winds bellow and blow. I'm as warm as a July tomato. Peaches on the shelf, potatoes in the bin. Supper's ready, everybody come on in. Taste a little of the summer. Taste a little of the summer. You can taste a little of the summer. My grandma put it all in jars. Well, there's a root cellar, fruit cellar down below. Watch your head now and down you go. And there's peaches on the shelf, potatoes in the bin. Supper's ready, everybody come on in. And taste a little of the summer. You can taste a little of the summer. You can taste a little of the summer. 'Cause my grandma put it all in jars. What with the snow and the economy and everything, think I'll just stay down here and eat until spring. Peaches on the shelf, potatoes in the bin. Supper's ready, everybody come on in now and taste a little of the summer. Taste a little of the summer. You can taste a little of the summer. My grandma put it all in jars. When I go to see my grandma, I gain a lot of weight. Her dear hand, she gives me plate after plate. She cans the pickles, sweet and dill. She cans the songs of the whippoorwill and the morning dew and the evening moon. And I really gotta go see her pretty soon, 'cause these canned goods I buy at the store ain't got the summer in them anymore. Oh, let those December winds bellow and blow. I'm as warm as a July tomato. On the shelf, potatoes in the bin. Supper's ready, everybody come on in now. Taste a little of the summer. You can taste a little of the summer. You can taste a little of the summer. My grandma put it all in jars.
And now it's time for the Farm Report. Today, we're going to be talking with Max Leonard of On a True Farm. You may know Max. We did a piece with him a couple of episodes ago about garlic. He had beautiful garlic and beautiful locally grown baby ginger all summer long and into the fall at the Saturday market. Let's give him a call now.
Hello.
Hi, Max. It's Mara from Glorious Food on KPTZ. I'm calling for the farm report. What's going on out at the farm right now?
Good afternoon, Mara. Well, it's a beautiful December day out at On a True Farm. Well, we're preparing for the very last farm market this weekend.
What are you going to have?
It's going to be a bit of an eclectic mix. We got a bunch of really great beets and lots of winter root radishes, and we have the last of our turmeric, probably a little bit of greens and kale and Swiss chard and anything green and leafy, because people really appreciate that this time of year.
And but you still have the garlic left?
We've got a very small amount of garlic. Mostly it's all been sold out. Speaking of garlic, though, the next year's crop is already coming up. The little heads of garlic are poking up through the ground.
And what about ginger?
Ginger, that's been sold out now as of last week.
I've been loving having your locally grown baby ginger. I've been using it in all kinds of stuff all fall. Pretty much any time I make a soup or a stew, it gets some ginger in it these days. I'm sorry, it's all gone.
It was enjoyable. I couldn't get away from having 2-3 cups of tea every night with it. Such a nice, warm, spicy taste compared to the ginger teas that you buy.
Yeah. What are you planning for the first market next spring?
I am busy right now in the seed catalogs. I have been placing order after order after order this week. I've got all of my 35 varieties of tomatoes ordered, melons and sweet corn, and just all kinds of good stuff. Right away at next year's market, there will be a whole lot of nice, big, mature heads of lettuces, carrots and radishes and spinach and probably some mature cauliflower and broccoli and beets and things like that.
It's my favorite part of gardening, the part where you sit indoors and read seed catalogs and dream about the future.
Well, after the 16-hour days of summer as a farmer,
yes,
it is enjoyable to have a little bit of time with the darkness to think forward into what you're doing next year. I will admit that.
Thanks a lot, Max.
Take care. Thank you for calling.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. I'm Mara Lithrop, and you're listening to Glorious Food on KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington. We are out at Egg and I Farm, out on Egg and I Road, at a private abattoir, and an abattoir is a butchering facility. And we are here to butcher the pig that my husband and I bought to eat all this winter. So we're out in the yard right now, and there are a couple of pigs out here, and some chickens, and dogs barking out in the distance, and way off in the back field, there are a couple of Scottish Highland cattle. This is about as country as it gets. So we're in the shop now, and the woman in charge is Janet Aubin, one of the farmers at Finn River. And Finn River is where we bought our pig. Janet, you raised our pig, our beautiful pink pig, right?
I did.
And now we're cutting it up.
What are you working on? So this is the picnic shoulder that I've got right here. I separated it from the top of it, if you think about how the pig stands. So the picnic ham, it's sometimes called, is a smaller leg. So the front leg on the pig is a little bit smaller. This is the lower portion. This is great sausage meat. It's got a nice mix of fat and muscle tissue in it. It does have a big ham bone that goes through it. So that does make a nice bone in roast. We can cut it into smaller roasts. We almost have a little bit of what could be a belly roast on the back side of it, where we did cut it off the true belly, the bacon belly. So we could get a nice little roast out of
that.
Let's do that. All right, you could roll that up, stuff it with herbs, pop it in the oven on a low, slow cook.
Do I want to leave the skin on or not?
I would, yeah, because then you could just fold this in half, truss it up, stuff that with herbs.
Oh, yeah. So, Janet, what I think is going to be the most useful for me in the kitchen later on is if we break this picnic down into the subset muscle groups, and then I'll have it, like, for stew meat, or I can grind it, or I can have a little roast.
Okay. Great.
And I want to save the bone because I will make bone soup out of it.
Okay. Great. So I'm just breaking it between the muscle groups here, kind of the natural part the meat wants to fall apart. And this is kind of more the European style butchering, the seam butchering it's sometimes called, where you're separating. You're almost just using the knife to separate the meat more than actually cutting through the meat. All right, so our next big set of decisions comes out of the Boston butt. So
this is a whole Boston butt here, right? And that is, tell everybody where that comes off of the body of a pig.
All right, so the Boston butt is the top part of the shoulder and the neck of the pig. So it is a lot of really strong muscles. If you think about the pig holding its big, huge, strong head up all the time, it has a lot of modeling in it, and it has, I think, some of the most delicious bits of meat in it. Great for slow cooking. It also, in the middle here, is the copa, which can be pulled out and cured whole.
You want to try that, George? My husband George is here. He's the smoker in our family. Well, not, he doesn't smoke, but he smokes meat. So,
so there's a round muscle, a long round muscle in here that can be pulled out and smoked or cured. Is the copa.
What is the other option?
So the other options, we could pull out one of my favorite slow cooking roasts here, which would be the blade roast, and it's going to be part of kind of the shoulder meat, and then it's going to have this loin end in it. That's a fantastic roast.
I think, like that would be.
Okay, great. Let's do that. So I'm sawing through the vertebra here. And you just want to saw the bone, and then as soon as you hear the difference in sound there, then you know you're through, and then you want to switch to the knife and finish the cut with the knife. And there is the blade roast. To finish this one off, we can either leave this little bit of bone on there, which will just give it more flavor if you're gonna roast it, or we can just lift the vertebra and those little bits of rib right off of there.
I vote that we lift it off, and then I am going to turn this into options. Maybe it'll be stew, maybe it'll become soup. All this beautiful fat will go in with all the fat I'm going to render to make lard.
Okay. I'm just going to cut right under the vertebra, and since Mara is going to make soup out of all these bones, it's not the worst thing to leave a little meat on there.
I agree.
So there's the bone, and then we're left with this beautiful piece of shoulder meat, and it still does have
the blade in there.
Is just super difficult to bone out. You end up mincing up your roast quite a bit and then losing that potential flavor anyway.
George, what do you think if we leave this thing whole and turn this into a giant pot roast at some point?
I think so.
I'm going to go ahead and cut the skin off, but I'm going to leave most of the fat on this, right?
Yeah, or if you're going to roast it in the oven, you could leave the skin on, and before you roast it, you can get an X-Acto and score it. And that way, if you are leaving your options, might as well leave the skin on. If you decide to do something else with it when you pull it out of the freezer, you can always skin it then. When you score it, it's just making
More
edges for the fat to render out. And so,
and it turns the skin into crispy, really crispy, yummy little chewy nubbins.
Nubbins is our new favorite word in the butcher shop today.
And so what are we calling this? A blade roast?
We're calling that a blade roast.
Okay.
You this can is call a blade that a blade roast. Janet's favorite.
Is this when I'm supposed to invite you over for dinner when I cook this
one?
Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah, I'll write my phone number on it so you don't forget.
Okay.
I've actually used these vertebrae when I've boned them out like this with quite a bit of meat left on them for a pozole stew. That way you're getting a really rich broth and you're getting little bits of meat that are falling off the bone. Great.
My producer, CJ Lazenby, is standing here holding the microphone, and as soon as the word pozole came out of Janet's mouth, CJ started nodding, but not just with her head, with like her entire upper body. So, CJ,
oh, no.
Do you like pozole?
Oh, it's my favorite.
George and I went for the slaughter of this pig a couple of days ago, although we're not recording that for this show. And it was a beautiful slaughter, if such a thing is possible. Everything was neat and clean the whole way along. It was a really, I've never seen a farm slaughter before. And I think it's my new favorite way to, if you're gonna do this, it was really kind to the animal.
It's honoring the meat because we're using virtually everything.
Yeah.
The only thing that we're not using is some of the intestines.
But, you know, I mean, that's kind of the farmer way. It's like when what they say about butchering a pig is you want to use everything except the oink, right? Nothing's wasted.
So, Mar, this is a beautiful piece of upper shoulder. It's about half of the Boston butt. You asked me what my favorite pork recipe is, and I have a recipe that's kind of a modified version of, or a guess of what the pork roast for at El Paseo, the famous sandwich shop in Seattle, was. And I have a recipe that's a guess of what that is, that uses a ton of citrus juice to kind of marinate the meat in before you slow roast it. Mm-hmm. I would save this and I will send you the recipe.
And I will put the recipe up on the website, so anybody who wants to get the sort of like El Paseo roast pig can send me an email at gloriousfood@kptz.org and I will send you Janet's recipe. So Janet, how many pigs did you raise this year?
We raised 12 pigs this year.
And what's going to happen to the other 11 pigs?
The first pig that we harvested this year, three folks who work with us had a friend come up who is a charcuterie master.
Ooh.
And they broke down the entire pig, about 200 pounds of pork, and cured the entire thing. So they made dry cured sausages, they made sweetheart hams, which are like mini prosciuttos,
right.
They cured the copa, loins, and bellies, and then they boiled all the bones and canned the bone broth. So not a single bit of this 200 pound pork went into the freezer. It all got cured.
What happened to all the skin? Was it just left on the cuts?
They made cracklings. Yeah.
All right. And did you get to try any of the stuff?
I just was lucky enough to try some of the hams that just came out of the curing room just last night, and it's like pork candy.
So, Janet, using me and George as your example, let's talk for the people who are listening about the process of acquiring a pig and having the amazing experience of butchering it with you.
Yeah, so there are a couple ways that we sell pork. One is if you want to just try some of our pork before committing to a whole pig yourself, we'll have USDA cuts available at the food co-op in Port Townsend starting in December. And those are from pigs that are from this same herd, grew up in this lovely summer in the bottomland at Finn River. So then the other way that we sell pigs is like what George and Mara have done here. And they purchased the pig whole from me, whole and alive. And so then it was their pig. And then they asked me to process it, to harvest it for them. So that's what we did. And we are not a commercial venture in doing that. We raise pigs commercially, but we don't process them commercially. So I'm just doing this for them and teaching them how to harvest a pig and how to break it down. If you want to get a pig from me, you can contact me before the spring and I'll raise a hog for you.
And if people don't want a whole hog, but maybe a half a hog, but they don't have friends that want to split them with us, and we are splitting our pig with our friends Carrie and Rex, can you help them find a pig partner?
Yeah, I can help you find a pig partner. I can partner you up.
The slaughter happened right on at Finn River, right?
Yeah, so we did this slaughter on Finn River, and we do really like the on-farm slaughter. It's so nice not to have to transport a live animal, not to make it endure any of that stress. It's also stressful on the animals, stressful on the humans to move animals around, and expensive. So you can either do it the way we did it, where we did on-farm slaughter and I actually did the harvesting for them, or we can call in someone who will do a on-farm slaughter and then take it to a WSDA butcher shop like Home Meats or Sunrise.
And if somebody really wants this experience of cutting and wrapping their meat up, having the experience be really hands-on, what do they have to do?
All my pigs are sold for the year, but if you're interested in an opportunity a little bit closer to now, there's going to be a class that's going to be taught in this same shop through Cedar Root Folk School with Doyle Yancey, who raises Tamworth hogs on this farm here. And then in January, there will be a class with Patrick and Cameron and Tassie's friend Brad Butterfuss. and Brad is going to be doing curing pork.
And so anybody who wants to find out about those should like get in touch with the
Yeah, look up Cedar Root Folk School. And check out all the great classes that they have. And if you're interested in butchery, particularly those two coming up in our local area in the near future.
And those classes go fast too, don't they?
Yeah, those classes fill up quickly. So.
Soul food, that's what I like it. Yeah, like it. I'm talking.
Thank you, thank you, thank you to Janet Aubin and Jeff Barwath of Finn River Farms for this incredible experience. Glorious Food airs every month on KPTC 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, Washington. Thanks to CJ Lazenby, producer and sound engineer extraordinaire, and thanks to KPTC's station manager, Nora Petrich, and programming manager, Larry Stein.
Cornbread, collard greens, candied jam, and a black-eyed pea. Oh, that's what I like.
And remember, everybody's got to eat.